with Pat Caputo and the radio voice of the Detroit Tigers, Dan Dickerson.
This one is gone!
On Tigers Radio, 97.1, The Ticket.
.2 4 8 5 3 9 97 97 is the phone number. Double D, long time no see there.
It's Saturday. Been 48 hours.
You know, usually we're in our terrestrial studios here in Southfield, but not at Comerica Park. But we are once a year, and it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was a very energetic crowd, as it always is, and I think everybody appreciated the fact that for one of the few times, the only time that I can remember since they moved it to Comerica Park, that it was a 45, 50-degree day, and everybody, I think, you know, it is that fun time of year, and everybody can be optimistic. I think there are a lot of things to be optimistic about this team, and everybody who joined us on the stage, and, you know, it's a live audience, I just think, you know, they're relaxed. They're looking ahead to the season. They're I thought we learned a lot over the weekend as well.
Well, I can tell you this. You have the same many ways, same mileposts that I have in the wintertime because I was, you know, doing that for so long, you know, with the caravan and, you know, Tiger Fest. Of course, I've been doing that for a number of years. But before that, you know, always on that bus trip. And I just remember that this week it was very unusual to have weather like this.
Yeah.
Because every year, the weather for that caravan and every year for Tiger Fest is amazingly cold.
Even if there was warm weather on either side of those days.
Right.
Those days always seem to bring out. There was a day when it was 5 or 6 degrees, single digits, and that line was going around Comerica Park.
You know, you said 5. I think you're being generous. You know, my recollection of that day, and it was 2008. After they traded for Miggy and Dontrell Willis.
One of the first years at Comerica then,
yeah,
right?
I don't know. I just remember that I was fascinated sitting up there and looking out because we get there early and how many people were lined up around there. And there was a big crowd there on Saturday. Tiger Fest sells out every year in very quick fashion. It's always fun to do the show. Always appreciate it. Al Avila talked to us at great length. Dave Dombrowski used to give a state of the team there. All the media would be sitting there. The most Dave would expound on his team during his time as general manager. And Al does the same thing. So we enjoyed it, talking to David Chad as well as assistant, and Brad Osmus and Nick Castellanos. And we had a nice conversation with Alan Trammell about the Hall of Fame and all those things as well.
Yeah, and just reading some of the after the Hall of Fame vote last week, didn't really get to it with Alan, but I really believe that he's got a shot with the Veterans Committee with a new way that they are voting on veterans, dividing it into eras, that they're going to be voting on his era later this year. And it sounds like, just getting the kind of feel of the national media, that this is a shot for Alan Trammell to make it next year with Jack Morris. I did not see Lou Whitaker's name mentioned.
Yeah, which I think is odd, because if you believe in metrics, and you and I both do, that they're definitely a very important way of evaluating players. Lou and Tram are both among the top 100 players, and I think Lou has a better career WAR than Reggie Jackson and is close to Derek Jeter.
And they're both in the top 10 at their position,
yes,
or very close to it. I know Tram is, and I'm not sure. I think Lou is within the top 10 or 11 or 12. You can tell it would mean a lot to Alan Trammell. He's not going to campaign for it. I think he would just be thrilled if he got in, and it seems like this may be the year. What do you think about Omar Vizquel, real quickly, because it doesn't seem like anybody thinks he's going to make it next year on the first ballot?
Well, he'll get my vote.
Well, put it this way, I read several who said he probably will not make it on the first ballot, which puzzled me a little bit, surprised me a little bit, because he seems like a first ballot guy to me.
Well, I would, you know, I'm going to qualify this because I'm only allowed to put 10 names on the ballot.
Right. It's going to be tough,
and
as we saw this year.
Right. But there are three guys that I voted for this year that got in. But there are a couple guys that I'm going to add to the ballot next year simply because I didn't put them on this year, and they're close. One of them is Trevor Hoffman, and then the other one is Vladimir Guerrero. They're both, like, right up there. And, you know, I have a policy, and it's my right to do this, but if somebody gets close to being in the Hall of Fame, I am not going to be the one guy that keeps him out. Those are the guys that earned it, and I'm not going to be some kind of snob and say, well, it's a Hall of Great, not very good, and you're either Hall of Famer or you're not. Some guy gets that close, he's had those dignified careers Vlad Guerrero or Trevor Hoffman have had. I'm going to vote for him. Right. So, you know, looking at it, you know, metrically, Guerrero wasn't, you know, way up there, not even close to Tram and Lou, but he definitely had a prestigious career. And Trevor Hoffman's a closer, and a closer in the modern era, didn't throw a lot of innings, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of leverage points there.
Right.
He didn't have a lot of success in 1 year, I think, in the postseason, things like that. I voted for him 1 year, pulled him off this year. I go back and forth on closers. But looking at it, I'm not going to keep him out of the hall. So there's two spots that come up, and then there's going to be some guys that are added to the ballot. And they have to, I have to make a decision on somebody like Vizquel. But I do believe that at some point, if it's not next year, I'm going to vote for Omar Vizquel. He's the best shortstop I've ever
seen. And that's going to be a great debate because the offensive numbers are not great. He's a below-average hitter, but he stole 400 bases. He had almost 2,900 hits. And as you said, arguably the greatest shortstop defensively, the most premium position, that or catcher, and he played it as well as anybody ever has, 11 gold gloves. Does a guy like that belong in the Hall of Fame? My answer is yes, he does.
Yeah, and it's something.
If you're considered the best at your position, that premium defensive position where you can measure these things, and he immeasurably was one of the very best.
On the eyeball test.
Yeah, and the eyeball test, too. Yes, you belong in the Hall of Fame.
I think
he'll get there. I don't think it doesn't sound like next year, at least doesn't seem like it.
Well, I think it'll be interesting what people think that are voting because a lot of folks look at those offensive numbers. It didn't matter with Ozzie Smith. But there'll be a lot of folks who, you know, are voting that don't look at metrics. They don't look at anything. They don't remember, you know, just how great he was just with the eyeball test. I mean, you watch Omar Vizquel play shortstop. That was amazing day after day after day. And I think sometimes it hurts guys. And I remember Tram saying this one time about his Hall of Fame. And I talked to him. He said, you know, the one thing about me, he said, and hopefully you feel this way, talking about the writers in general, is that you watch me play one day, you may not be that, you know, wooed by me. You don't watch me 3 days, you might think I'm a little better. I say, you've watched my entire career, you might, you know, same with Lou, think that I'm an outstanding player, and that's the way I approach it. Some guys, they got the one day moment, and then others, it's the long-term thing.
So, longevity's a big part of it.
You know, but Omar Vizquel had that. He played forever, and he was at a top level defensively forever. He wasn't a bad hitter either, you know. Wasn't like he was an automatic out.
Right.
I know against the Tigers, he wore them out a few times. So.
All right. We learned a lot over the weekend. Should we talk about some of the
things? Yes. One of the things, 248-539-9797.
What stood out
to you? Well, to me, it's the acquisition of Mikey Matuk.
Yes, indeed.
The center fielder. And, yeah, what do you think about it? Because I know you're a big Jacoby Jones guy.
Well, I thought one of the interesting thing I thought that we learned over the weekend was it seems pretty clear without directly saying so. Well, they did say directly that the Tigers, as an organization, probably would love to see Jacoby Jones get a little more seasoning at AAA and start the year there. It's going to be dependent on how Mikey Matuk plays in spring training. But the other thing we learned, there were several really good stories, I thought, about Tiger beat writers and others about Mikey Matuk and how the Tigers did some homework on him, talked to his college coach about just how good this guy was down at LSU, where, of course, he played with Jacoby Jones. But Paul Maneri, is that how you say it? Am I saying it correctly?
Right.
Said he was one of the most, I mean, electric players that he'd seen in his career, his long coaching career. That's not a small thing. I'd seen Mikey Matuk a little bit. He's played left, center, and right, but he played mostly center at LSU. This is a guy who is an electric player, which means he's athletic, which means he can go get it, which means, in my opinion, it's his job to lose going into spring, because I still think Tyler Collins, even though he's a left-handed bat, probably is not. He's not the defensive center fielder that Matuk or Jones is going to be in. I still believe in Jones in center field, and it just seems like it's his job to lose. Collins will kind of back him up, and then at some point, Jacoby Jones takes over in center field if he's as good as everybody says.
Well, it's no small thing. I mean, DJ LeMahieu from Brother Rice High School played at LSU, and he was a batting champ, and he's won a couple gold gloves. You have a player like Bergman, who was taken early in the draft by the Astros, from LSU, middle infielder. So LSU has had a number of premier players in the time. The recent years. So that's no small thing.
Yeah, it surprised me. I didn't realize he was that dynamic a player for his coach, and that's why one of the reasons the Tigers traded for him. They want to get younger and more athletic. This is a guy who appears to certainly be able to do that.
And the idea is to identify somebody along those lines and then be right about them. And we'll see whether the Tigers are right about Mikey Matuk. 248-539-9797. We'd love to hear from you. Tiger Fest was this weekend. There's a lot of optimism about the Tigers now.
If you can't be optimistic now, when can you?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just the fog has gotten everybody or whatever it is.
Hey, have these been the foggiest days you've seen? I mean, 4 or 5 days in a row?
I was going to drive home in it, too. It's amazing. But what do you think about the Tigers and their chances? Are you more optimistic? Because I think everybody came out of the season last year thinking, oh, my gosh, especially after, it looked like they were going to go into all this retooling mode. Now you kind of get a sense that people are relieved that they're keeping the band together. Is that false hope, or do you think the Tigers will be indeed that good? 248-539-9797. Also coming up next, we'll talk about the Tigers' bullpen, which remains the elephant in the room. Ryan LaFever, who's a broadcaster for the Royals, will join us at 7:45 to talk about the death of Yordano Ventura, unfortunate death in a traffic accident in the Dominican. Also talk to him a little bit about the Royals, primary competition, one of them, with the Tigers in the American League Central. Love to hear from you at 248-539-9797. He's Double D, Dan Dickerson. I'm Pat Caputo. You're listening to Tiger Talk here on 97.1 The Ticket.
Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo and Dan Dickerson on Tigers Radio, 97.1 The Ticket.
What you have in today's baseball is most teams are hoarding, or let's say guarding their young up-and-coming prospects. They're not as apt to trade those kind of guys. Those are the high commodity guys nowadays.
That's Tigers general manager Al Avila. We talked to him on Saturday at Tiger Fest. Pat Caputo along with the radio play-by-play voice of the Tigers, Double B Dan Dickerson, talking about the Tigers. Are you optimistic about the Tigers in this coming season? It seems like there has been a groundswell of optimism. 248-539-9797, if you want to weigh in on this. Do you feel like this team has a chance? Dan, I hear it all the time. I know. I think for you, and I think you've described it this way, it's like nails on a chalkboard. It kind of irritates you.
What?
When people say the window of opportunity is closing and all this stuff. Because every season is different.
Right.
And I don't know
and
if
still,
I feel the same way about it.
I thought the coverage over the last few days has been excellent, but I did see the aging team narrative is still there among even those who are covering the team. And, I mean, we can break it down a little bit later on, but, I mean, I looked at it. Yes, there are some guys who are over 30 on this team. The biggest question is, are they in decline?
Yeah.
Or because you don't want a ton of guys over 30, and this is an older team, but are there guys in their 30s in decline? And the answer for the majority of the key guys is no.
I would say, a question for Victor Martinez is a valid one, and he's important because he's a left-handed.
Not in decline, but you worry about the knees every single day, and you will until he retires.
Yeah, and I don't think he's the same hitter he was a few years ago.
No, he had a monster year in 2014.
Yeah, right.
15 knees, 16. That's, I think, what you can expect.
Yeah, that's pretty much. And that's still not a bad year.
Would you take 320-80? He was above that last year.
So, yeah. And so you look at Cabrera, he had a bounce back year. Verlander had a bounce back year. There's no sign of Ian Kinsler declining. And I understand that sometimes guys hit walls and everything. But when you talked about selling off players, to me it would have been cutting off their nose to spite their face to get rid of Kinsler.
And you said so at the time, and we talked about it at the time.
Yeah, so but on the other hand, they didn't make any moves of great significance. They just didn't.
And standing pat oftentimes can be tricky.
Yeah.
It can be dangerous. Let's face it.
I don't know if we talked about it. You're less concerned about this than I am. But I have two question marks.
All right.
I had at the end of the year. I had those questions throughout all last summer.
Yep.
One of them was their bullpen. It was 25th in Major League Baseball last year. It wasn't what it should have been. And I know K-Rod did all right, but to me, he's not necessarily that lights-out closer.
Well, he's not a lights-out closer, but I'm fine with him at closer. I'm concerned right now about the setup guy.
And then you got Justin Wilson, who didn't do as well as what he should have.
He faded down the stretch the last 2 months, and it was a fade. It wasn't just a little bit. It was a real fade down the stretch. He was much more hittable.
Same with Shane Green, who they seem to be counting on still.
Those are two big names who faded down the stretch. I think Wilson had a little elbow issue. He did get a shot for it. But I would agree with you. Right now, the biggest question mark on this team, those two guys are being leaned on heavily, and I think they can still, based on what we saw in June and July, be those setup guys. But that's a big question mark going into the year.
When it comes down to Bruce Rondon, I'm from Missouri, not Michigan. To me, it's a show-me state. Show me, Bruce, because I think they kept him out of high-leverage situations on
quite
for
clear.
A reason.
There were six games I counted that they trusted him with a lead in the seventh or eighth inning of fewer than four runs. They just didn't. I mean, and he made big improvements, cut his walks, bumped his strikeouts, lots of swings and misses. But like you said, they did not trust him in those key situations.
248-539-9797 is the phone number. Paul, you're on Tiger Talk. 97 won the ticket. Hey, Paul. What's up, Paul? Hey. Hey, Paul's not there, so let's try Sean. Sean, you're on Tiger Talk at 97 won the ticket. What's up, Sean?
Hey, guys. Great to talk to you, Dan. So I just wanted to say that I think the biggest difference in this year's team, if it works out the way I'm envisioning here, is that you're not going to have Pelfrey and Sanchez trotting out every 5 days. I really believe it's going to be Boyd and Norris, and I think that makes a world of difference because the other two lost a boatload of games for us. But I guess I'm just confused as to what their role is going to be because they're both still on the roster, and I don't know how that's going to play out.
Now, I think it's one of the big questions of spring training. And, I mean, yes, the Tigers owe them $25 million combined this year, but I still have to believe, even with that, that's you can't ignore that number. But even with that, I still have to believe the Tigers are going to pick the 12 or 13 pitchers who have the best chance of making helping this team win rather than guys who are making the most money. Pat?
Well, you know, we talked about it before.
Which means, to me, neither one is in the rotation.
I think that there's a possibility you'll see one of the two in the rotation. I'm not as sold on Boyd as you are.
Yeah, you got to get on board with Boyd.
Well, I just, you know, if you look at the numbers, and then I remember a few starts where he was very good, others he wasn't so good. And I think Pelfrey and Sanchez, maybe not likely, but there is a chance that one of those or both of them could come back. And because Pelfrey throws in that high plane and the hard sinker stuff. He threw 93 last year above the major league average fastball.
And so he did the year before, too.
Right.
It doesn't
translate.
He has nothing else to go with it.
And Sanchez, you don't know. He's had success. Your thoughts, Sean?
I just think this is what everybody's missing about this team. Everybody says the same team again. It is not because, you know, Zimmerman has proven that he's a hell of a pitcher. And if he's healthy, I have no reason to believe he's not going to return to form. And I think those young guys have really proven also that, you know, they can perform at this level, and I think they're going to mature even more. And I just think that starting rotation is all the difference in the world, and it's a different team because of it.
It could be. I mean, you have four guys. I believe Daniel Norris definitely going to have a big breakout year.
Health is an issue with him.
I think
he'll stay healthy, but he's had two obliques and a back issue in the space of a year and a half.
And he's got a mean beard. That kid's got a mean beard. He's got a Henry Zetterberg beard. It's really, really a great beard. Hey, Paul, you're on Tiger Talk. On 97 won the ticket. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call, guys. I really feel good about the Tigers. If they just played 500 against Cleveland, they would have won their division. We've got four young starting pitchers. I think the main problem is Victor Martinez has got to be moved to maybe sixth or seventh in the lineup. They need some speed at number four, number five, and move up into the line. Our coach waited a little bit too long to sit up and down and make him realize he's got to put the ball in play. So I'm really feeling good. If they can find someone to play center field and get a left-handed bat, they're there. They're there for the next 3 or 4 years. This is not an old team. I mean, the outfield is average age is 28, and the infield, I think the average age is 26. So, you know, if we find the pitching and we get four young pitchers, I'm ready to go.
You know, I think Upton, Dan, and Paul is a huge X factor. What do you think?
Well, he's got to learn to put the ball in play, and I don't think he's being – he's got to run the bases better. The first 100 games, he looked like he was in outer space, and then he changed the whole game around. The last 60 games, he played great. So let's get him going early in the season, and let's start stealing the bases and move the runners along. There's such a word called bunt and move from first to third, and that's been our problem all year.
Yeah, I'm not a big bunting guy, but I think Upton could, if he gets out to a start like he ended or a reasonable facsimile. Yeah, Dan, you're talking about a very talented guy, and I think people got the wrong impression that he was one of these guys who didn't care or something along those lines. He's one of those guys who cares deeply and is a good teammate.
Oh, he absolutely is. I thought how he handled it was remarkable because it had to be unbelievably frustrating to be. I mean, he was really, let's face it, unproductive for 4.5 months before he sat down for those 3 days in August. I don't know quite what to think because to have a 652 on base plus slugging through mid-August and to finish with an on base plus slugging of 1.162 with 18 home runs and 136 at bats, you can't have any. I mean, you're almost doubling what your production was earlier in the year. To me, we said at the time they signed him, this is a guy you're going to have to deal with the inconsistencies over the course of a season. At the end of the year, it's pretty consistent numbers year to year, but there'll be inconsistencies within the season. We didn't expect that kind of inconsistency, but really all of his production pressed into a 38-game, a quarter of the season from mid-August on. I would think we're going to see inconsistencies in hot and cold during the season, but I would think it'd be much more spaced out and I would think more consistent over the course of a season. I'm talking a 280 slugging, 480 to 520 over the course of a season with fewer ups and downs. I think that's very reasonable. I think 30 home runs is very reasonable. What we saw at the end was a guy that you couldn't get out over the last 38 games.
248-539-9797 is the phone number. You're listening to the Tiger Talk. I'm 97.1 The Ticket.
Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo and Dan Dickerson on Tigers Radio, 97.1 The Ticket.
You are going to have some ups and downs, and because they're young, you're probably going to have to lean on your bullpen a little bit more. You know, if they're all in the rotation, they may start out back-to-back-to-back, and over the course of the season with off days, you may have to separate them because you don't want to tax the bullpen over three consecutive days. But I just think in the near future, that's a good sign for the Detroit Tigers, having those three guys.
Fred Osmus, Tigers manager, 248-539-9797 is the phone number. Love to hear from you here on Tiger Talk.
Talking about the three youngsters, we asked him, and he didn't commit to it fully, but it sure seems like Norris, Boyd, Fulmer will be in the rotation. I do think one thing to remember, why I think you might be right, Pat, that either Sanchez or Pelfrey is the number five starter, is if they let those guys go, because they're not both, if they're out of the rotation, they're not both going to be in the bullpen. No way. They're going to be let go. They won't be in the organization. They're going to have to eat some salary if they're not in the rotation, in my opinion. Pelfrey might be in the bullpen, but not both. Then you think about what's the depth beyond those five, because you're going to have an injury at some point. What's your depth? And that might factor into it. Does Matt Boyd start at Toledo, where he really doesn't have a whole lot left to prove, or does he start in that fifth spot? Until that last start, when he couldn't get an out, who was it against? Kansas City?
Yeah.
12 starts, 13 games for Matt Boyd, where he pitched very well. ERA a little over three. He was a guy who I thought made a lot of strides.
He did.
Last year.
I don't want you to, or anybody out there, to take it that I don't think Matt Boyd's pretty good. Right. When they acquired him, a couple of scouts that I know that aren't with the Tigers organization, but scout the Eastern League pretty thoroughly. And that talked about when they got Norris, and boy, one of the scouts actually liked Boyd more than Norris. And for the reasons we've seen, he commands the ball, he pitched at a high level in college. I mean, he was on an elite college program at Oregon State. I don't think people put two and two together, but that's where they are. And he's got a lot. He's got the poise. He's got all these different things. I also think he may be just a little short. You know, there's not an exploding fastball. He doesn't throw as hard as Norris.
Right. Right.
And he doesn't have that one out pitch, you know, that these outstanding pitchers have something. The real good ones have, like Michael Fulmer. He's got three of them. So you look at it from my standpoint, I look at it that there may be something there. And Pelfrey, and I'm talking strictly in a baseball sense, he's 6'7". He throws on a big downward plane. There's some hard sink to his fastball.
It's why they liked him.
Right. And it was a bad signing analytically. It just was. It was a bad signing, period, to give him that amount of money when you have that much money to get a four starter. But there is some hope for him. And Sanchez has had some success in the major leagues. You don't know.
All right.
The human arm is weird. Sometimes it bounces back at odd times.
Correct. That is absolutely correct. But now the Tigers, I mean, they've always said you're really basing your decision not on spring training for the most part.
Right.
But more on track record. And his track record now, Sanchez, last 2 years, 540 ERA in 300 innings, 59 home runs allowed.
Dan, he was so bad last year, I almost wanted to go down to Comerica Park and grab a bat, and I haven't played baseball in 30 years.
So if you're the Tigers and you're trying to figure out, the only thing I would think that would tilt your feelings in terms of him being in the rotation over Boyd would be a 93 to 95 mile an hour fastball by the end of spring training.
Well, you know what I can, you know, I
because
can
otherwise,
see.
How could you possibly say that Boyd is on the ascension, Sanchez is on the decline, that Sanchez would deserve that job over Boyd?
Well, I'll tell you, this is what I think might happen, and I don't know. You know, maybe it'll work out the way that everybody's anticipating, the way, you know, it sounds like you're anticipating with Boyd. But having, you know, just knowing the way it often goes in my mind, and I see it, I can see a scenario where they want to see what happens during the regular season for the reasons you're talking about. They're going to want to see it in the regular season, make sure before they get those contracts.
And I think that's very realistic.
And Boyd's got options left.
Right.
Send him down there. He can get a starter,
too. Let's be sure before.
He's going to be working because you don't always need that fifth starter at the beginning of the year.
Right.
He's going to get in taking a regular turn in the rotation. And then you find out exactly what you got, and then you make the move if it's in. And then often you have injuries. You know, people forget a lot of times out of spring training, one of those starters gets hurt. There's all kinds of different scenarios that happen.
If both Pelfrey and Sanchez are gone, or one's in the bullpen and one's gone, because, again, they're not both going to be in the bullpen, and if they're not in the rotation, what's your depth at Toledo if one of your five starters gets hurt?
Yeah, they don't have a lot of starting depth.
Right.
I mean, guys like Buck Farmer and things, they want to use them as relievers.
I think Buck Farmer's better as a reliever, no question.
Well, I think they do, too.
Yeah.
248-539-9797 is the phone number. Paul, you're on Tiger Talk, and 97 won the ticket. Hey, Paul.
Well, just to piggyback your conversation there, guys, you had, the beauty of baseball is that if it doesn't work, you can always change it.
That's
you've got
very true,
to
Paul.
Plug in.
You know,
I'd like to talk about the starting rotation here a little bit, and let's use the mini Wayback Machine for a minute. And at the end of last season, you know, everybody was talking about, well, trade Verlander. You know, trade this guy. Get rid of the contract. Oh, his worth is so amazing. And I want to take it back, you know, to the late 80s when Jack Morris was up for a contract. And Dan, your old station, WJR, the old sports rep, everybody was calling the station saying, oh, get rid of the bum, get rid of the bum. And the very intelligent Frank Beckman and probably Pat Caputo with the Oakland Press were saying, who's going to pitch the innings? Right now, for me, Verlander is probably, if you're going to keep the band together, the most important cog. Because if he's gone, who's going to step up and pitch those innings? Who's going to go 7.5, 8, sometimes 9? Who's going to do it?
Well, you're going to need Zimmerman or those other guys. But if Justin Verlander isn't himself, all these optimistic things that we're talking about.
Yeah, and he's not going anywhere. That's quite clear by now.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the same. And you're right about that, Paul. People were saying that over and over again, year after year. I can't say that the thought didn't come into my mind because they owed him all this money and he was in, you know, the depths of his physical troubles health-wise when the contract just extension kicked in, that it was a bad contract. Now it looks like the bargain of all time. You know?
I'm thinking so as well, because you know what? Major League Baseball, let's face it, without a cap, it's a race to 50 million, guys. And in a couple of years, provided Verlander can reinvent himself like it seems he has, he's going to be the steal of the century.
Yeah, you know, and that's interesting. And I thought one of the more telling moments, Dan, that came out of the weekend was we had John Westhoff on, who's the legal counsel for the Tigers. He was asked one question by us, but it was the most important answer that you got as a Tiger fan. Mike Yilich said, look, we're taking a beating on the luxury tax. It went up through the collective bargaining, but they got an owner who's willing to take that.
That's
and
right.
Have a contending team, you know, and take the financial beating rather than pull the chute and just sell everybody off and have a, you know, 50-60 win team.
Right.
That was the most important answer that we got out of the weekend. Maybe we have John's comments, but – you know, and John's the one who deals with that, the luxury tax.
They're willing
and all
to pay
that.
The luxury tax this year. There's also, I think, an amount of money has to pay at the beginning of the year for the whole asset to debt ratio.
That's right.
And
they're still carrying Prince Fielder's contract.
Right. So, yeah.
A lot of it.
No, that was the whole key to the offseason. He did not have to get down to a certain number talking about Al Avila.
And, you know, that's John Westhoff said that, and he said that's exactly what happened. 248-539-9797 is the phone number. Tiger Talk, 97 won the ticket.
Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo and Dan Dickerson on Tigers Radio 97.1, The Ticket.
If you talk to our players, you talk to our staff, and you talk to most people in baseball, they'll tell you, and even Jim Leland told me, we have a really good baseball team. I went down, you know, player by player in our lineup. We have a deep lineup. Our two-corner outfielders and our two-corner infielders, I mean, those guys are capable of hitting 25 to 30 home runs because they've done it year after year after year, driving in 80, 90, 100 RBIs.
That's Al Avila, Tigers general manager, 248-539-9797. We'll talk to Ryan Lefevre about the past. You know, Yordano Ventura in Dominican Republic, the Royals announcer, Ryan Lefevre, very, very shortly. But first we'll take a call from Mark. You're on Tiger Talk on 97.1 The Ticket. What's up, Mark?
Wow, this is fun talking to the best play-by-play guy in the biz.
There you go. I agree with you, Mark. Second on that.
About the last conversation, the luxury tax, they always said this, you know, the rumors of a fire sale were never true, but it always seemed like the goal to get under the luxury tax was there. And then they raised it to 195, and I think they're still a little over. Are they still looking to get to that 194 and just hover under that, or is that talk kind of dead?
I don't think they have a chance to get under it because you have to add another 10 to 12 million on top of, I think they're 197, 198, and you add another 10 million plus for benefits and all the other parts of the contract that have to be included under. To
14 or 15 million, John Westhoff said on Saturday.
So they're probably really? 15 million over, and there's really, unless you trade Victor Martinez or somebody like that, which I don't think is going to happen.
And then there's also the other thing that, you know, they're carrying the money on Fielder's contract that they still, so that's it's more than even $15 million.
No, that's included in the 197.
Okay.
And what happens contractually, say if they were to release a Sanchez or if Victor underperforms, how much do they still have to carry and how much relief
all
do they
it.
Get?
All of it.
Yep. Shoot.
They would have to trade Ian Kinsler or something and get a minimum wage guy, or something along something that they're not going to do at this point. You know, and then somebody like JD Martinez or Jose Iglesias or somebody they would trade, there's a possibility that could happen. There's a lot of interest, particularly in Iglesias at this point, from what I understand.
Yeah, but he seems like if you're looking to build for the future, the guy you want to build around, he's an all-star caliber.
I don't know if they don't really feel that way. Maybe I don't know. He's making $4.1 million after arbitration was settled. So and you got a guy in Dixon Machado, and they may not feel as high on him. If you talk to them on the record and all those things, they'll say that. But they, you know, there's some debate within the game on Jose Iglesias and whether he's getting too costly. And, control is only for a couple more years. But the point is that $4 million isn't going to make or break them, under the luxury tax, I guess would be the way that I would put it. But anyway, we're joined now by a radio play-by-play voice. It does some TV, too, as well for the Kansas City.
It's mostly TV these days for Ryan.
And that's Ryan Lefevre. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing well. I never thought I would say this in light of what's happened in Kansas City, but I'd sure love to have a luxury tax conversation instead of what's going on with us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Ryan, we wanted to have you on. You and I, we go back a long ways to my early days doing this job, and you've been in Kansas City a long time. And as I said, when we were talking earlier in the day today, I mean, it seems like an especially tight-knit community, maybe more so than other communities. More players seem to settle in Kansas City after their playing days or in the off season than with many other teams that are not based in, Florida or California. So we just want to get your perspective. Yordano Ventura, it's just a stunning news yesterday, killed in the traffic accident, one of the bright young arms in the game. Just your perspective on how this has hit the team and the community.
It's still stunning, Dan. I mean, I can speak for myself. I'm just kind of numb. You know, I'm usually a pretty emotional, sentimental person, and I'm just kind of emotionless as if, like, did this really happen? And maybe it's just the world of social media these days where it's a little thread on Twitter. It didn't happen here. It happened a long ways away. So it's tough. We happen to have fan fest this weekend.
Oh, man.
There was no good time for Yordano Ventura to lose his life this way. But, I mean, here we are trying to ramp up the anticipation for what we think is going to be another contending season and then this. So it's just, you know, with today's modern billboards, you know, a lot of them are digital. And so you're driving around town and there's a, you know, a Home Depot ad. And then all of a sudden in a flash, there's In Loving Memory of Yordano Ventura. So it's just it's a strange feeling to your second point, Dan, about the connection between the players and the fans. And, you know, I really only know Kansas City as far as the team playing well and how the fan base has connected with them. And so for me to say it's better than Detroit or somewhere else, I mean, I really can't say that. But I can say, and I think you'll relate to this, Dan, because you and I have experienced the same things. We were so bad for so long, so that when they did win, it was special.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're also a two major sport town. So, you know, the Royals and the Chiefs, I mean, that's it. You know, we don't have an NBA team and an NHL team. So that just kind of deepens the connection. And I don't know how Tigers fans felt when the Royals made it to the World Series in 2014, other than being disappointed the Tigers weren't there. But it just seemed like the Royals were the team to pull for throughout the country because they just have so much fun.
Yep.
They don't subscribe to the country club. In fact, I'm looking at a billboard right now in Loving Memory, Yordano Ventura, 1991 to 2017. You know, there's none of that, you know, act like you've been here before, respect the game, respect your opponent, which is secret code for, you know, don't have fun on the field. And they had so much fun. And I think people who imagined what it would be like someday to be in the big leagues could really relate to just the pure joy that they played with. And Yordano was one of those guys, you know, Dan, you know, I mean, he had a little pizzazz, he had a little flair to him. He was probably one of those guys that you loved to beat if you're on the other team because of some incidents he's triggered in the past. But
right.
In the clubhouse, he was just a sweet kid.
He also was an incredible talent. I mean, there are a few pitchers threw as hard as he did, especially starters.
Yeah, I mean, that's the baseball side of it. I mean, I think at this point right now, the appropriate thing to do, the respectful thing to do is to say, well, you know, we can't talk about baseball now. It's all about Yordano's you know, family and friends, and that's true. And yet none of us would have ever known Yordano Ventura if he didn't play baseball, if he didn't have that thunder in his right arm and pitch some really important games for the Royals. He pitched 7 shutout innings in game 6 of the World Series in 2014. And even though the Royals lost, I mean, we don't get to experience what
right.
game 7 is like in Kansas City without that performance. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a baseball side to it. You're right. I mean, and I don't say this to be insensitive, but, you know, the Royals have a lot of players who are going to be free agents at the end of this year. They just signed Danny Duffy, and that's been great news. But Yordano Ventura was one of those guys that was going to help prevent the Royals from having a major drop-off after 2017 to keep them competitive. He was growing as a pitcher. He was growing he was maturing as a human being. And so, yeah, I mean, without trying to, you know, make it about baseball. I mean, this was his dream come true. This is what took his family out of poverty.
Yeah, I read a lot about this. I guess there's a lot of traffic deaths, more than any other place in this hemisphere, mm-hmm. in the Dominican Republic. What I didn't read is why. Anybody right there, why there's so many traffic deaths? Marte, another player, died in Dominican the same time.
Well, I mean, I've never been to the Dominican Republic, but everyone I know that's been there has said when they come back, and I'm honestly not trying to make light of the situation. I'm just, you know, hearing what they've reported, that they feel lucky to be alive when they come back from the Dominican Republic because of that. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, two-lane, mountainous, narrow highways, and people drive fast. The only thing I can relate to is I visited my high school principal, who's a priest, about 10 years ago in the mountain region of Jamaica, and in a lot of these countries, they say that, you know, they're basically 2.5 lane roads. So you'll have one guy going northbound, one going southbound. And there's this imaginary middle lane that if you want to brave it and just kind of weave in and out of traffic, you know, then go for it. And, you know, if that's what you're used to, if that's what you're raised with, then, you know, that's fine. But in the United States, we're not used to that.
Right.
And I remember
driving in the mountains of Jamaica, white knuckling it all the way. And, you know, the driver's, you know, got one hand on the steering wheel and talking to me over the other shoulder. And I'm in my mind, I'm putting my will together. And so, so on one hand, I think it's dangerous compared to what we're used to, but this is what, you know, this is what they've grown up with.
Ryan Lefevre does television play-by-play and does a superb job, a good friend. Ryan, thank you so much for the perspective from Kansas City on the tragic death of Yordano Ventura. We look forward to seeing you under happy circumstances during the regular season.
All right. I look forward to that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That was Ryan Lefevre. And Dan enjoyed it. Another quick hour. We'll talk to you next week.
Next week.
Right. Coming up next, another great play-by-play legend in sports in this town, Kenny Cowan. I'll do Inside Hockey Town. It's 97.1 The Ticket.